meeting into session. I have a quorum now that I'm here. But do I have a volunteer to do a prayer this afternoon? Otherwise, I'll have to pick somebody. Any volunteers? No volunteers. Everybody's looking down just like at church. All right, I will do a prayer for us today. Just bear with me. Sungwayadizu, Hakwego Eskaji, Atohwayanuni, Huguanigula, Dayetinu Haladu, Yunkinu Honjaji. Sungwayadizu, I thank you for this day. I thank you for our family, our community, and for all of our relations. Thank you especially for the little ones and our elders. So they always say when we have children present and our elders that our circle is complete. So may you watch over our families. May you bless those who are struggling with this holiday for whatever reasons, personal grief or otherwise. And may we have a good meeting this afternoon. We thank you for all the gifts of creation. Thank you for the medicines. And again, we thank you for the people and for the blessings so that we may continue to sustain our families. Dr. Antonio Duhage and Guatnigo, Dani.
Yeah.
Okay, I understand. Melinda is out. David is taking personal time. And I think
they're on their way back.
They're on their way back. Brandon and DeHasse are on their way back. So we have reduced our agenda. We will not be doing our reports. Those will all be getting deferred to the next meeting. So at this time, there's a need for an agenda to adopt the agenda. Is there a motion to do so?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Make a motion to adopt the agenda with the noted change on the reports.
There's a motion by Lisa, second by Jenny, to adopt the agenda with the noted change to defer all reports to the next meeting. Questions or comments? If none, all those in favor of the motion to adopt the agenda, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. It says there's a presentation for United States flag flown in Southwest Asia in honor of the Oneida tribe. Jenny?
Angela Parks, Mike Hill, Jerry Skinador, and Michelle Doxeter, please come forward. I'm sorry. That was Jerry Cornelius, not Jerry Skinador. Good morning. This morning we have a special presentation from Angela Parks. Angela Parks has served in the United States Air Force for both the active duty and Air Force Reserve commands. She is currently serving in the Air Force Reserves based out of Minneapolis, Minnesota. Her work performed on the reserve side of the house and in deployed location consists of collecting, preserving, and writing about today's events in order to preserve the information for tomorrow. In March of 2015, she was tasked and mobilized for deployment to an undisclosed location in Southwest Asia. While deployed, she worked in a one-deep office for the 386 Air Wing Commander at an undisclosed location in Southwest Asia, collecting, writing, and researching information related to the war in the Middle East in support of the Air Force Central Command. She further assisted in chronicling how the wing contributed to the fight, provided historical information to sister services, coalition partners, and host countries when necessary, and acted as an information liaison.
So I did my own write-up. I am honored and humbled to serve in the Air Force as both an active duty airman and reservist. I not only consider myself in service for one country, but I consider myself in service for this particular nation, the United Nation. I'm grateful for the understanding and commitment offered to me not only through the United Tribe, but also Michelle Doxeter, my director, as I have served the U.S. Air Force in any capacity. Policies are only as good as the management that believes in, upholds, and supports them in any work environment. Michelle, I want to publicly thank you. Honorable Business Committee members, distinguished guests, representing the Oneida Tribe, thank you. And my family, I couldn't do it without you. So I, with great pride and appreciation, want to present this flag to the United Nations. I'll tell you just a brief synopsis of where it was flown and what aircraft it was flown on. The MQ, if anybody's familiar with any of these aircraft, the MQ-1, it was flown on a drone aircraft controlled. It's controlled takeoff and landing is done in Southwest Asia, but the actual mission itself is controlled here in the United States when it's flown out in Southwest Asia. It was also flown in a C-17. They logistically move cargo and materials around the AOR, Area of Operation, for the Air Force Central Command. It was also flown on an AC-130 and an MC-130. Those two aircraft are both combat aircraft. And a C-130, which is considered a transportation aircraft, what it does is it moves cargo, moves materials, moves things that need to happen from one part of the AOR to another part of the AOR. So I thank you for all being here, but I thank you for supporting what we do. We couldn't do it without you.
You're welcome.
And Michelle, I appreciate you. So, thank you.
All the rest of our veterans. We're very proud. Thank you. We're going to be flying it out on 4th of July at Palau, so with great honor. So we feel pretty lucky here. Be proud. Thank you.
And we have one more gift. Angela, on behalf of the United Tribe, the United Business Committee, and the Oneida Retail, we'd like to present you with these two gifts, a black ash basket, beaded by an Oneida local artist, and beaded medallion, beaded by Oneida local artist. We want to thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jenny, and thank you, Angela, for your service. Thank you as well to all our veterans for your continued service on behalf of everybody in this country. As they say, freedom is not free, but we appreciate the sacrifices that our veterans make each and every day. Gerald, don't go too far. You're up for to be sworn in. So, oath of office for the Oneida Nation Veterans Affairs Committee, Gerald Cornelius, to be sworn in.
Gerald Cornelius.
Hereby promise. To uphold the laws and regulations.
To uphold the laws and regulations.
Of the United Tribe of Indians of Wisconsin.
Of the United Tribe of Indians of Wisconsin.
The General Tribal Council.
The General Tribal Council.
And the Tribal Constitution.
And the Tribal Constitution.
I will perform my duties to the best of my ability.
I will perform my duties to the best of my ability.
And on behalf of the Oneida people.
And on behalf of the Oneida people.
With honor, respect, dignity, and sincerity.
With honor, respect, dignity, and sincerity.
And will maintain confidential information with the strictest confidentiality.
And will maintain confidential information with the strictest confidentiality.
I will carry out the duties and responsibilities.
I will carry out the duties and responsibilities.
As a member of, and then state your board name.
As a member of the ONVAG board.
And all recommendations shall be made.
And all recommendations shall be made.
In the best interest of the Oneida Tribe as a whole.
In the best interest of the United Tribe as a whole.
Congratulations. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Gerald, and congratulations. Next on our agenda, we have the minutes of December 9th.
Move to approve.
Second.
Motion by Jenny, second by Lisa, to approve the minutes for December 9th. Questions or comments regarding those minutes? If there are none, all those in favor of the motion to approve December 9th meeting minutes, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Next item is a request for a resolution, CY2016, County Tribal Law Enforcement for Brown County.
Madam Chair.
Lisa.
I'll make a motion to adopt the resolution titled CY2016, County Tribal Law Enforcement, Brown County.
Support.
So motion by Lisa, seconded by Fawn to adopt a resolution titled CY2016 County Tribal Law Enforcement. Questions or comments regarding this particular resolution? This is a resolution regarding our grant, and the grant is an amount of $18,222. There are no questions or comments. All those in favor of the motion to adopt the resolution, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. The next item is a request for a resolution, CY2016 County Tribal Law Enforcement for Outagamie County. This is a grant request for $16,037. It's a partnership with Outagamie County Sheriff's Department.
Move to approve.
Second.
It's motion by Jenny, second by Lisa, to approve the CY2016 County Tribal Law Enforcement resolution for Outagamie County. Questions or comments? If none, all those in favor of the motion say aye.
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 Any opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. The next item is the Legislative Operating Committee. There's a request to accept the December 2nd Legislative Operating Committee meeting minutes.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
A motion to accept the December 2nd Legislative Operating Committee meeting minutes.
Support.
Motion by Brandon and support by Fawn. Sure. What's your question, Mike?
Can you tell me where are because I know there's a number of laws that are being brought forward. I think currently there's like some 50 some laws that are pending. Where currently is the election law in this process? Because that was supposed to have been brought back to GTC over a year and a half ago, and in the last two reports on the LOC, I haven't even seen the election law mentioned.
Brandon?
Yeah, I know it was postponed for a while because of the constitutional amendments. Those postponed the amendments to the election law, and it's still there because of the appeal to the constitutional amendments now. So I guess in short, that's the answer. It's in limbo because of the constitutional amendments and the appeal of those.
Any other questions or comments? Mike?
Well, that's kind of interesting, because then if that's the case, then shouldn't all that stuff that's being transferred over to the judiciary now also be put on hold?
No, because the constitutional amendment that's in reference to the judicial the judiciary is actually just an inclusion in the Constitution. It has nothing to do with it being a valid, that was adopted in 2013. So the judiciary is there. And so your question may be more aligned to the petition of the judiciary, but not the IBIA appeal.
If the election law is on hold because of the constitutional amendments being brought forward, or the perception of those changes, then with the IBIA standing as it is, they could potentially overturn anything that GTC has already been done and been implemented. So then shouldn't that also be on hold?
No, that's an incorrect statement. The judiciary was adopted in 2013, and even if the IBIA would overturn that amendment in regards to the judiciary, it still would have no effect on whether or not the judiciary is legal, because that has been passed by General Tribal Council already.
The laws of the tribe.
Yeah, I don't understand.
Quite simply, they would be enforcing the laws of the tribe.
Okay.
I have one quick question. In the garnishment amendments, it says there's a motion to accept the legislative analysis of the garnishment amendment and direct the change to the law and prepare for a public hearing date. What particular changes are being amended in the garnishment?
If you go to the next line, directed change requires the tribal departments to pay filing fees instead of being exempt. I believe that was the only change for the garnishment. We've been trying to include what specific changes we're doing when we say noted changes within the document.
How much are the filing fees?
I believe the filing fees are generally, that wouldn't be something that would be inside the garnishment, but I think they're around $50, if memory serves, with the tribal court.
Yeah.
I think it's dependent on how, what they're trying to get out, how much money they're looking to, but I think it's $50.
Yeah, the issue is who is going to be the responsible party to file for that. If it's going to be the department, or the judiciary, and that's right now is kind of really what we're determining. We're kind of saying preliminary that the department should, and that would be attached to the garnishment, to the order. So it would be an inclusion of the order, so the person, the individual that had to pay, that would be included in. So the judiciary shouldn't be the one to bear that cost.
I see. Okay, thank you, Brad.
Yeah, getting back to what Mike was talking about with the judiciary. My question has been throughout this whole thing is, without that being in the Constitution as an amendment, legally it can't exist. So my question has always been, why was that pushed through like it was? Why wasn't it done after the Constitution had been changed? Even though GTC did approve it, it shouldn't even went forward because it's not in our Constitution to have a judiciary system. So that's always been my standpoint on it. How can you have something that doesn't exist in the Constitution? And that's what I'd like an answer to.
All right. Joanne?
That's actually a misunderstanding. The Constitution also doesn't create the Personnel Commission, which was created by the General Tribal Council, the Trust Enrollment Committee, which was created by the General Tribal Council, or any other various entities that exist as a result of the General Tribal Council's actions. The General Tribal Council adopted a resolution which delegated some of its authorities to the judiciary, and that's a lawful action of the GTC to do.
Okay.
GTC also created that election law. So why is it now all of a sudden that that can be put on hold due to the constitutional amendments, but all of this other stuff can be brought forward?
There is nothing in the election law that requires amendments until such time as the constitutional amendments are effective. So unless there is some specific issue in regards to the election law that you're looking for an amendment regarding, there is no need to bring it forward. The constitutional amendments are not yet effective.
But those changes that were taking place prior to the election for the constitutional amendments even taking place. I recall because I was at two or three of those work meetings.
Any other comments or responses? Okay. Any other questions? I guess I don't know that there's a direct answer to his question, so. All right, all those in favor of approving the LOC December 2nd minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries unanimously. The next item is a request to accept the LOC quarterly report for the 2015 fourth quarter.
So moved.
Support.
Motion by Brandon, second by Jenny, to accept the fourth quarter report for 2014. Questions or comments regarding the report? If none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries.
Thank you.
The next item is a request to approve these. Oh, thank you, guys. The next item is a request to approve December 14 Finance Committee meeting minutes.
Support.
So motion by Trish, second by Jenny, to approve December 14 Finance Committee meeting minutes. Question or comments regarding the finance minutes? If there are none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries.
This, I'm sorry, Madam Chair.
Yes, Mike.
Is this on the investment policy statement as well?
Not specifically the investment policy, no. It's their
December
14th meeting minutes. They meet twice a month.
Right. I must be missing that. Okay.
The next item is the quarterly report for the Finance Committee.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Trish, you want to give us an overview of your report?
It's quite lengthy. In the fourth quarter, I tried to do a little bit better reporting in regards to the policies that we have and that we disperse through, or I'm sorry, that we coordinate throughout the Finance Committee. One of the first items that we deal with on a regular basis is items that are sole source items over $50,000. They have to, according to our purchasing policy, come through the Finance Committee for vetting. So we process that. You'll see in the report there was a total of 264 requests from departments in the amount of $51,205,948.13. These are different types of for supplies, equipment, purchase order increases, contracted services, and so forth. Some of the policies and procedures are for. We made two major changes in the last quarter in regards to the community fund and the I forgot the name of the other one. But anyway, we reduced the amount of request, the amount allowed for request for the purposes of expanding the dollars so that they can go further because we were receiving considerable amount of requests. One of them is the Finance Committee's donation policy and procedures, and the other one was the community fund Finance Committee donation policy is usually for the local communities, groups, large organizations that we donate to, such as the veterans and the local churches and so on. And the community fund is in regards to individual requests. Usually they are youth trying to better themselves in holistic sports, other types of education. So we've been able to utilize the funds for that. In the fourth quarter, the donation line for fiscal year 15 was depleted after 16 donation requests at $44,999. And then the community fund, there were 35 requests that were approved in the amount of $15,658.41. And also included in the packet is the investment policy statement that the Finance Committee follows, and then that is administered by the Finance Department. We get quarterly reports about the investment portfolios, and then we forward that information to the Business Committee. For detailed information on that, if you want to talk about that, I would defer that to the CFO. And in there you'll find the asset allocations and all of that, fixed income, cash and equivalents and all that. And that's pretty much it for the fourth quarter.
Any questions or comments regarding the fourth quarter Finance Committee report?
Madam Chair, move to approve the report.
I've got some questions.
Is there support on the motion?
Support.
A motion made by Jenny, second by Trish, to approve the fourth quarter report for Finance. Mike?
Thank you. I'm looking at that on page 67, the triennial investments. It's my understanding that we took a loss. Can anybody up there tell me whether or not the minor children's trust account also took a loss during this period, and if so, how that happened? That's my first question. And then the second one is, with respect to the policy, investment policy statement that's being made, I've got some serious concerns in this, because under the roles and responsibilities, not once has General Tribal Council ever mentioned in it. Not once, not anywhere. And that to me is extremely dangerous.
I guess, why do you feel it's dangerous? I don't know that General Tribal Council would be active in how the investments are carried out for the tribe. And we consult with a money manager, and they manage our investments, and it's based on the allocations that is described on page 70 with the equities, bonds, and cash, and large and small value equity, and cap equity, and growth equity. So there is a formula, there is a standard that's adhered to, and I guess I'm not sure what role you think General Tribal Council plays in this. There is a financial report through the Treasurer's Office that's submitted to General Tribal Council twice a year. So I guess specifically, what is your concern?
With that regard, is the fact that oftentimes requests are being made for information specifically, whether it's through finances or other areas, and oftentimes those requests for information are being met with resistance, and or we're being pushed off. And I look at that and say, and when I don't see GTC anywhere in there, that sends a red flag and a red signal off to me that that shouldn't be happening. That's just my take on it.
Well, the Finance Committee meetings are open, and they do report out on a regular basis. So I think, you know, any general travel council member can attend a Finance Committee meeting pretty much at any time, and they have a standard meeting schedule throughout the year. And again, I think if there's questions that are pending, they can be asked during the treasurer's report or any time really during the annual or semi-annual meeting as well.
What would, and again, I guess I look at that and I say, and I'm glad you're making that statement, because I would have some questions and concerns, only because I know that there's those other four positions that are coming in, and one of those that are being considered is possibly another CFO or CEO, and I don't know if all the titles and names have been all worked out or whatever the case is, but I look at that and say, if another CFO position were to come in, then how does that contradict with what we already have, and what would that reporting mechanism then be for them? How does that change, and how does that shift all of this around? Would it?
I don't know, Mike. I don't have any more specific information. Trish, do you have anything to offer?
Any new positions wouldn't interfere with the investment policy. You asked first about the investments policy. Is that what you're talking about? Or are you talking about the relationship of the reorganization? Okay, so because we're on the Finance Committee quarterly report, I would gear the first part of the discussion into the investment policy, and that's where the CFO can respond to your first question.
Okay.
Which I forgot what it was.
About the loss.
Larry?
Mike, it's important to know that the loss stated is unrealized. The investment was not liquidated. The converse of that is if we have a gain, we would state that gain at the benchmark time frame. But certainly those assets weren't liquidated at the end of the quarter, so it's an intermittent reflection of the reduction of the asset value, but has not been capitalized or sold at a loss. So it is unrealized. Importantly, our money managers as a group have consistently beat the benchmarks over a 1, 3, 5, and 10-year time frame, and the Callan report will reflect that, and we by no means, other than acknowledging the prudent man rule, and you can Google on that, preempt any interest of the General Tribal Council. The policy really is the essence of managing those assets for the best interest of the tribe and GTC. That's really what we do. So by no means, if it's not explicitly stated in the policy, that it's contrary of the interest of the membership. So I just want to state that as far as roles and responsibilities. When we do the revisions, that might be duly noted that we identify that this is GTC money. So point well taken. And we did have, the markets did have a widespread loss both in the equity and bond markets for third quarter. That wasn't an anomaly only evidenced by our portfolio. That really was evidenced really throughout the globe. So hopefully a better quarter in fourth quarter. And, you know, again, we didn't realize any loss. Your question regarding the trust assets, I'm not in a position to answer that. That would be more appropriately directed to the trust committee. Thank you.
Okay, if there aren't any other questions or comments, all those in favor of accepting the Finance Committee fourth quarter report for 2014, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Thank you. The next item, Community Development Planning Committee, no report submitted for fourth quarter. Quality of life, there is November 12th meeting minutes.
Madam Chair.
Lisa.
Make a motion to accept the November 12th, 2015 quality of life meeting minutes, meeting notes.
Support.
The motion by Lisa, second by Fawn, to accept the November 12th quality of life meeting minutes. Questions or comments regarding those minutes?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Brandon, in those minutes, it states on page 83 that you want to establish a task force to address the community substance abuse and community wellness strategies. Then you list out some specific accomplishments. When is that supposed to be created by, and how many members are going to be on it?
Currently, right now, we're drafting those up. I think we have 5 members of the committee, of the task force right now. It'd be myself, Fawn, the community wellness director or supervisor, a person from behavioral health, and an officer from OPD, and then Mandy, what's her position?
Game prevention.
Game prevention coordinator.
Have we seen or has OPD seen an upswing in drug related cases?
Absolutely. There's been a number of break-ins over the past year that are attributed to, petty theft break-ins that can be attributed to heroin use, those small crimes that are getting the quick fixes, the quick hits, $20, thefts. That's been in high occurrence over the past year, and that's the type of thing we're really trying to coordinate, getting information out to the community is so that we're aware of those things.
Okay, all those in favor of the motion to approve the November 12th quality of life meeting minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. The next item is a quality of life fourth quarter report.
Move to approve.
Second.
Motion by Jenny, second by Brandon to approve the fourth quarter report for the quality of life. Questions or comments?
Briefly, how many? I know it says here that you're scheduled to meet the second Thursday of every month from 8 to 10. Can you tell me how many times you did meet during this quarter?
Fine.
We met in August. The other two meeting dates, we did not meet quorum.
I'm sorry, I missed that.
1 out of 3.
So basically, there's been one meeting and no quorum for the other. Therefore, the meeting, the quarter only reflects the one meeting in August. Any other questions or comments on the fourth quarter report, Fawn?
We did state that under the activity summary that July and September were canceled due to no quorum.
Any other questions or comments regarding the fourth quarter report? If not, all those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. The next item is GTC petitions. There's a petition submitted by Frank Cornelius regarding the audit of Seven Gens. Seven Gens request to turn money back to the tribe, Freedom of the Press, and Tax Oneida Business Committee for failure to dissolve Seven Gens Corporation. Lisa?
So just a quick recap. We are to the point where we're ready to accept the legal analysis, and per our conversation in executive session, that particular analysis was moved and decided upon there. So at this point, I'm only asking for us to accept the update as information because we have the information in closed session at this time.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Second.
So motion by Lisa, second by Jenny.
Jenny and Lisa.
Sorry. Motion by Jenny, second by Lisa. To accept the legal analysis as submitted. Any other questions or comments on the report or the update? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. The next item is regarding the petition for per capita payments. Lisa?
Madam Chair, this item was due back for the meeting in order to receive the legal and financial analysis. We did receive a request in from the law office asking for a deferral to the January 27th meeting, and that would be for both the financial and legal analysis. There's the request submitted.
What is the basis for the deferral?
I need to defer to the law office and finance for that.
Now that the 13 resolutions from Madeline Gensgau, the 4 resolutions from Mr. Cornelius have been completed, I'm able to begin the analysis in regards to the per capita petition. I anticipate that since there's only one item on that petition, that it will not take that long to complete. If I complete it before the second meeting in January, I'll bring it forward before then.
Well, I understand that there are other pending petitions and analysis, but this has been outstanding for quite some time. And General Tribal Council continues to ask what the holdup is, and just that there's other petitions, I don't think is a sufficient response. It needs to get done so we can get on with this. Not only that, this can have a bearing on the upcoming financial process for the tribe's budget, and so we need to get on with this. It's not going to go away, and we need to get this off of our agenda here and get it in front of General Tribal Council.
I have a question with regard to this too, please, Madam Chair.
Mike, what is your question, Mike?
My question is are there currently any policies or procedures in place for the law office so that these petitions do come in and go out in a timely manner? I ask that because I know several petitions have been out there pending, and some of these have been sitting out there for 6, 8, 9, 10 months, some almost a year. So I'm wondering if there is something in play here, some kind of policy, procedure, role, rules, responsibilities that says that when a petition comes in, the secretary's office verifies that it goes out for financial and legal analysis, that each of those do it in a respective amount of time frame.
That our office attempts to provide legal opinions in as timely a manner as that we can. In part, some of this is in regards to collecting the information. And the Secretary's office has been very helpful in speeding that up and requesting all the various departments, divisions, et cetera, to provide feedback in regards to the impact on these petitions. The primary cause for any delay or the length of time at which it takes to conduct the analysis is that the petitions no longer are a single subject. There were 13 resolutions on 13 different subjects, all significant, complicated subjects attached to 3 petitions. And then there was another petition submitted after that that contained 4 resolutions, which actually were not submitted several months after the petition itself was submitted. So even if the legal analysis had been conducted on that petition, it couldn't have been started until well after June, late into July, when the resolutions were finally submitted. Unfortunately, I was still finalizing the legal reviews in regards to Madeline Gensgau's petitions. So we're trying to do this as quickly as we can, but in order to provide the analysis that the General Tribal Council has come to expect, which is comprehensive, it does take time. And when you end up with three petitions containing 13 resolutions, it takes longer than you would anticipate. As I indicated, the per capita petition should take a fairly short amount of time to complete because there's only one item on it. It is quite complex, and there are some questions involved in it, but it is a single item that can move forward.
So in answer to my question, then, the short version is no. There's no policy or procedure or rule or responsibility.
No, there is.
The short answer is no.
Lisa?
I'm going to approve the request to defer to the January 27th meeting, and I guess the other piece, I just want to reiterate to one thing, and that is it was a total of 17 items, and there is nothing that is over a year old, so I want to make sure that that's clear for everybody here as well, that that's not true. The last thing is that the law office has taken on not only just the legal aspect of it, but the administrative aspect of these analyses as well, due to us not having a general manager and not having a consolidated point of contact to compile all of the administrative information. We are relying on that office to complete that aspect of it as well. And so parts of those are included as they're needed, as those items come forward. So it is taking a little bit longer, and it is completely understandable why that is. I do understand the request and the desire to continue to move them along as timely as possible, and I think the staff is doing the best that they can with the resources that are available for them to complete them as timely as possible. I guess if we want to be proactive about it, we can offer support to the law office to let them know that maybe they want to consider bringing on a part-time attorney or somebody else to help with the load in order to turn out the work quicker. And I think that's something that we probably can have a conversation with Chief Counsel about in order to try to address those kinds of questions or have somebody on retainer that can help with that workload as it comes in. Because it does ebb and flow. Sometimes we have, six pending petitions like we do now, and sometimes we have two or one or none. So it really just depends on as it comes forward. So I'm going to make a motion to defer the legal and financial analysis to the January 27, 2016 Business Committee meeting.
As to which meeting?
There's a motion by Lisa, second by DeHasse, to defer the legal analysis to the January 27th meeting of the Business Committee.
And financial.
And the financial as well. Questions or comments regarding the motion? If none, all those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Thank you. The next one is a petition regarding an emergency food pantry.
Governmental Services Division has been very helpful and has provided a significant amount of information and background regarding this. I've also received information from various other resources. I am waiting on finalizing the per capita. I'm requesting a deferral until the second meeting in February. You should have this. If all things are going well, you will receive this before that date.
I know the petition process is here and that's going to move forward, but if GTC votes on this, does anybody see any major obstacles, as it were, that would bar this from moving forward?
I think this is something that has a financial consideration for funding, and it needs to be put into the 2017 budget. So we need to get this petition in front of GTC so that we can also get it in the process for the 2017 budget. Creating a food pantry is going to take up tribal resources. So,
if she had, and please somebody correct me if I'm wrong, I thought she had this slated for like October of 2016, which would also push it off into even next year's budget cycle, the fiscal year 17, correct? Because I thought that's what her goal was, or her aim was that it be open on October 1, which would be October 1 of 2016, but would actually be for the fiscal year 17 budget, correct?
The petition does state October 1st, 2016 as the date that it would be open.
Okay.
Yes. And this item has been deferred or has been pending since October 28th, and there was a 45-day and a 60-day time frame to get the information submitted to the appropriate administrative offices.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I'll make a motion to accept the progress report as information and defer the legal and financial analysis to the February 24th, 2016 BC meeting.
Support.
It's a motion by Jenny, second by Fawn, to accept the updated information and that the analysis for this particular item come back to the business committee February 24th meeting. Yes. Any other questions or comments regarding this item for the food pantry? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries.
Thank you.
The next item is a request regarding an update of the tribal ID cards for the age restricted products.
Madam Chair.
Lisa.
I'm going to ask that this item be deferred to the next meeting due to the fact that we don't have the director here today to have the conversation with about the use of the ID cards.
Second.
There's a motion made and seconded to defer this item to the next meeting of the business committee. Motion by Lisa, second by Jenny. Questions or comments on a deferral? If done, all those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. Next item is a request to post one vacancy on the Oneida Personnel Commission for the term to be carried out of March
28, 2017. So move, Madam Chair.
It's a motion. Is there support? As a motion by Fawn, second by Brandon, to post the vacancy for the Personnel Commission, and this is for the remainder of a term ending in March of 2017. Questions or comments regarding the posting of the vacancy? If none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. The next item is a request to accept the recommendations from the LOC regarding the cemetery action plan.
Okay, on November 10th, there was a business committee directive to have the LOC, I believe, review the cemetery law and give recommendations for the encasements, whether or not to include encasements in the law, and to look at the reporting structure, I believe. And so having looked at that, we discussed it and, having input from the enrollment department that they felt that, and we agreed with them that it should be left up to the family, but then we also put in there that recommendation that in the law it should have some reference into informing the families of the of a situation that may arise because of the flooding in the area. And so we just put in that the encasements are available. We did not make it a mandatory to have encasements. The second issue was the reporting structure. This one was difficult for the LOC because as a legislative body, we didn't feel it was necessary to legislate administration. And so, but nonetheless, we looked at it, discussed many options. We looked at the development of the cemetery work group and their development of a job description based on many factors, and having cemetery maintenance as one portion of their job duties and having a broader purpose in conservation, environmental, to do other things that are needed within the organization. We felt that was that was an added cost, There are also equipment needs that would needed to happen if we were to do it internally. We have equipment, but not equipment that would necessarily do the job. And seeing both sides, listening to all the information, you know, a $17,000 contract in comparison to a job, in addition to the organization still being developed, we felt that it necessary that we just maintain the same reporting structure as is in law, keeping it with the trust committee. So it sounds like we just got it and kicked it back, but we had a lot of discussion over it, and you know, we had a lot of meetings with the cemetery work group and all the, you know, appropriate departments.
Lisa?
Thank you for following up with the request that the business committee had. I do have a little bit of a follow-up on the encasements part of it. Could you just please expand a little bit more on what data you use to make the recommendation, the final recommendation? Because I think as we continue to proceed with the action plan that we adopted, we're gonna have the hydraulic study done. Is that how you say it? Yeah. Mm-hmm. The study done to make sure that we have the proper flow taking place of draining the water and things like that. So I guess I'm questioning it. I'm just a little concerned that if the study comes back and it shows us different information, then what conversation did LOC have around possibly revisiting the encasement provisions should that information come back indicating that we have to take a different direction? So I'm just curious about how you guys came to that determination.
Yeah, well, we also talked about an alternate site as well, too. So we were going to narrow that law to the discussion was to narrow that law in reference to that site, but we decided to keep that broaden out, so in case if we have an alternate site, we could incorporate an amendment to an encasements. So anything that we look, if there's, you know, the hydrologist study comes and we have all these other things that come forward, that we would feel it necessary to make amendments at that such time.
Okay.
So when those come forward, so we did have, you know, we felt that there's a need to be encasements, but as it is now, we felt that you know, the situation is there, and we felt it needed to be within the family right now. The varying costs, whether that's going to be born of the family of, you know, the apartment or whatever, that was still up in the air, and so we're like, well, that's a family decision on that. We didn't really want to broach that conversation.
Yeah, I think on the higher end, it was around $10,000 additional, for depending on the type of encasement.
Okay.
The LOC looked at some of the research that the LRO had done based on not necessarily the specific issues facing there, but just the general issues about the breakdown of the casket, the cost of the various types of encasements, and stuff like that, and then they made their decision. I don't believe that. I think the LOC would be open to, depending on how that study goes for the hydrological, however you say it, that study. I think they would be open to moving to changing it based on the findings for that. But I think the idea is to get the cemetery law moving, to get it to public meeting, and certainly we can make whatever changes, the LOC can order whatever changes in the law as need be as those studies come out. But I think the idea is to move, to get the law moving and to get that fixed and to move forward from there.
Lisa?
So just so that we don't lose sight of that when the study is completed, I'd like for when we, you know, if we choose to accept this recommendation at this time, that we ask for LOC to keep this on the tickler so that it can be reviewed one more time once the study's completed.
Okay. Yep. Yeah, we'll note that. And I think that'll be another question we'll have to ask the community too about encasements. You know, that's something that the committee, you know, we need to outreach to the community members on when they would, you know, consider another site, this site. Whether or not encasements should be mandatory or not. So I think that's a big policy decision. Yeah, thanks.
Jenny?
We also wanted to make sure that there's the communication plan that goes out to the families if they choose not to.
you know, that there may end up being divots in the ground.
So if there's not encasements, certain things can happen, such as the casket will decay, and then there's nothing supporting the casket, so that can create sort of divots on the top. It's kind of morbid, but it's something that indentation in the ground. Yeah, I didn't know that going in, and that could. That could happen. That could be sped up depending on the issues with the cemetery. So that's something that the LOC felt that it should be in the law to provide information to family members. So here's the information. If you want to do a traditional natural burial without an encasement, or you can go which way you want. That was part of the discussion that that the LOC had.
Any other questions or comments, Brad?
I don't know where these guys are coming up with this stuff, but I've visited a lot of cemeteries throughout the state during when I'm out trout fishing and stuff. I know of cemeteries that they were just buried in the ground, wooden caskets, and there's no such problem. I mean, New London's got one of the older cemeteries around, going back to the Civil War and that. And they didn't have encasements back then. You don't see the ground going like this where every grave is. Highland Memorial, where my mom's buried, has got a lot of old graves. I mean, it's something to be expected. But most cemeteries maintain it and take care of it. So why you're bringing up the concern, I don't know. So
it's because not really it was a concern issue. From the community. That's why. Huh? It was a concern from the community.
Oh.
That's
but
why.
Most cemeteries make sure that when they fill a grave in, that, so like Highland Memorial, the dirt's piled up about this high. And they're given it a year or more for that to settle in. And they don't replant grass until like a year to a year and a half afterwards because they make sure it's all settled. And that's what a lot of cemeteries do. And like I said, I've been back in cemeteries where it's just rocks with the initials. And this is up north. And you don't see anything up there like that, so.
I think.
I thought I'd mention it. That
from my research and contacting six local cemeteries, it seems pretty standard to require some sort of encasement. I'm not sure how far that goes up north or not.
I think that was just basically something for somebody to make money.
That could be.
I mean, we didn't have problems with it years ago. I mean, you look up at the Menominees. You still can go into parts of it, which most people can't, but I've been in there, that they still have the A-frames and the little poles up where there's burials open. So, I mean, there's a lot of places out west don't require it. I mean, it's just...
I think a lot of the issues in our cemetery is because of the water and the seepage.
Well, yeah, I understand that, but it's...
And if it was a higher ground and the water wasn't an issue, then not having an encasement probably wouldn't be as much of an issue either.
But like we're saying, where that cemetery is, it should have never been there to begin with, but that's
right.
Another issue.
Yeah. Okay. No, there's nothing at the time.
Madam Chair.
Lisa.
I'll make a motion to accept the cemetery action plan update dated December 23rd, 2015. Also asking for the Legislative Reference Office to revisit this item once the study is completed.
Second.
So motion by Lisa, second by Brandon to accept the action plan information and to have the LLC revisit this item after the study for the hydrogeology is completed. Any questions or comments on the motion? If not, all those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Anything else on this item?
Thank you.
The next item is a request for the Environmental Resource Board to lift a moratorium to allow access to where the water birds nest.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hi there.
I have a minutes from a BC meeting, November 5, asking for directing that the turn over the monitoring of the land use moratorium to where the water birds nest be given, I guess, turned over to the Environmental Resource Board. And the Environmental Resource Board met. They had a public hearing for the public use of land law and the land access designations on October 27th. There are comments from the community in regards to the property where the water birds nest. There was also a lengthy discussion on the issues around the cemetery. The board members took into consideration various opinions that were made by community members that were present at the hearing, and they decided that they were not going to change the designation for the public use of land access, meaning that it's a community access, and that they understood that there were a situation and issues with the cemetery, and that they were willing to change the area of the property to be accessed. And I have a map here to show you. Basically, what the map is showing is that this is the cemetery here. This property used to include this wooded area here, and we have since taken that out of the area to be the legal description for the where the water birds nest, so people will not be able to hunt there. That will be part of the cemetery property. Another issue was where the sweat lodge was located, and they have since moved, and the cleanup of the construction area that's already been taken care of. The Environmental Resource Board members have decided to keep this roadway open from Adams Drive and not to close it, but to continue to work on the County U access, so that if there were to issues or if we wanted to continue to have the bird tourism, ecotourism events happening on that site, they could use the County U road entrance and still have access to that property and not have to go past the cemetery to utilize that site. I did ask some board members to come here today so that they could tell you how they made that decision and why they made that decision. Several of the board members currently use this overlook on the Adams Drive entrance, and they heard from other community members that they enjoy that site as well. So that was the reason why they wanted to leave that site open.
Lisa?
Just to clarify one last point, my understanding also is that Herb did have the conversation with environmental around putting the buffer in mm-hmm. along the road as well. So that my understanding is that's included as part of the plan overall.
So the plan that Environmental Health and Safety came up with was to put a buffer that would include closing off that roadway. And the board members disagreed with that. They want to leave that roadway open so that they can have access to the overlook area to enjoy that site.
I guess that's the main issue, is that road runs directly alongside grave sites. And that's the issue, is when somebody is, you know, visiting the cemetery for whatever reasons, whether it's a committal or not, that becomes an issue, especially because tourism has been taking tours to that site and going right past the cemetery. And it looks like it's part of the cemetery's road because they run into each other. And there's no parking on that road. You go to the end of that road and it ends and there's no place to park. And I'm not encouraging that there be any place to park, but that the road be developed on the County U access side, because then you're not interfering with the cemetery and any of the burials there. It's right immediately next to it. It's not like there's any distance between the road and the cemetery, because there is none. And that's part of the issue that families raise.
And that was brought up at the hearing as well.
I understand that, but it needs to be addressed, not just that it was brought up. It needs to be addressed. And that's one of the reasons why we posed the moratorium.
So I have a follow-up question then, because the requested action that we have before us is to do the formal. So just to kind of step back just a little bit, we did take action to agree to allow Herb to continue on with taking over the responsibility of monitoring the moratorium and taking, you know, all those responsibilities on. We also, though, said that we need the formal recommendation to come back to us, and I believe that's one of the reasons why this is here before us today, if my memory serves me correctly. However, the requested action today is to allow the process to continue by lifting the moratorium and then creating the buffer to the cemetery. And if you're stating that that wasn't agreeable by ERB, then I think we need to go back and have another conversation, because that was the way that I understood it, is that was the compromise, is to leaving it open, was that whether it's a fence or shrubbery or whatever was going to happen, that buffer was going to be created along that little service road on Adam Drive there in order to create that distance between that little service road and the cemetery. And if that's not going to happen, then I'm not going to be able to accept the requested action today, because that was part of the whole package deal that I understood. So I need you to clarify that one more time if they're saying no, that they don't want to compromise on putting a buffer in.
They do not want to compromise on putting a buffer in. And I wish they were here to speak to you so that they could put it in their own words and give you their own reasons, but they're not here.
And I guess it's not clear to me what the intent is based on Minnie Garvey's letter to Councilman Hill. Brad?
Yeah, because I know the first time Dad and I went out to the cemetery, it was like a month or so ago. We went down past by the health center, down that way. And when I got to the gravel road, I thought that was the road to the cemetery. And when we got down there was a blacktop road that did come up to that. And that's the road you're talking about, right? That gravel road running back. So I agree, you know, it is very close to the cemetery. And I assumed that road was for that farmer, for access to his field. So you're telling me that that's our road going back to this other area?
Those are tribal roads, tribal access roads. They're not technically roads. There's a paved road, but it just ends, and then there's nothing there.
Because it looked like there was two steel posts at
the end
of it. But
they drive beyond it, the paved road.
Yeah. Another thing I'd like to bring up is, why are not the chair or vice chair of these boards, committees, commissions, or entities here doing this, and not the workers? That's one thing I'd like to see clarified and changed. That who's ever a chair or vice chair, one or the other has to be here for doing this. Because they're getting paid to be in an office working, not to be here doing the board's work. They're only staff. And that's a big concern a lot of community members have, too. But I agree with you. That road should be shut off right down by the road so that people aren't driving up and down that gravel road. So, thanks for the clarification.
Cassie.
All right. Well, there's many perspective and opinions on this topic, and I guess mine differs from many of them spoken already. Throughout the reservation, there's cemeteries here and there, and they're all right directly next to a much major, more highly trafficked road than the gravel road that goes back along our cemetery. And so for me, it's not, I don't look at it as disrespectful that someone uses that driveway essentially to get back to a wildlife area, and because I just like it, you know, right on Freedom Road here, the big stone church has the cemetery right there, comes right up to the easement for the road, and I never heard no complaints from any community members about we should shut down Freedom Road because there's a cemetery there, or down by Methodist Church as well. And so to me, it's just, I guess, a perception and opinion of individuals in the community of what a cemetery should be, and to me, our Oneida Cemetery is in a pretty low-traffic area compared to the rest of the cemeteries on the reservation. And so my personal opinion is that road should remain open for access to the community members to access the wildlife area, and I guess it's more of a perception that it's individuals, different opinions, I guess, that it's should be closed for being able to pay proper respects to, you know, our family members that are buried there, because I got family members buried there too as well. And I guess I never seen it as disturbing or disrespectful that there's a road, you know, a driveway right there, because this, you know, the few times that I've been to the cemetery, I've never seen traffic on that road. And I've traveled that road back to the wildlife area myself, and I don't see it as disturbing to the people that are, you know, visiting their loved ones in the cemetery. So I guess it's more of a matter of perspective of whether that road should stay open or closed. You know, if you look at the rest of the cemeteries on the reservation, they're all, the most of them are right next to very busy roads, and ours is located off of a more rural road in a more quiet, secluded area. So we're adding additional privacy for our family members as it is by having our own cemetery in this less traveled location. Thank you.
Lisa?
And I guess I want to just iterate, I don't disagree with the request that's being brought forward. What I don't agree with is the fact that my understanding again was that we would leave the road there open so that people could access that area again, but that there would be an attempt to put up, whether it's trees or a fence or something, to help create that perception, their perceived need to have that separation. And that's what I, you know, again, it's in the request, it's in the letter that Marlene signed, that this is the compromise, mm-hmm. and now you're telling me that it's not what they agreed to, and I need to understand that, because I want to get us to the place where we're trying to be, to accept it, but I don't understand that part of it.
Can I bring this map up to show you what I'm referring to? Because we might be saying the same thing, but it would help if you had a visual.
Yeah, I can see where the cemetery is. I can see, so the little service road there off of Adam Drive.
So this yellow line used to go like really close to the woods right here. And so this is the buffer that they're referring to in the letter. So this wooded area is buffering the cemetery from this natural area.
That's not what I'm referring to then.
No.
That's not what we're referring to. We're referring to along the road, there was an agreement to put some type of a buffer in from the road in the cemetery, asking for like putting in shrubs or a fence along that roadway, mm-hmm. along the service roadway, back to where the Waterbird's Nest site is.
So closing that road on Adams Drive is what
not
you're saying.
Not closing it, putting in a fence or
creating a division. Right.
Yeah, I think that could be part of a longer term thing. To work with environmental to do over the next year, I'm thinking, working with Pat Pelkey's office and the forester, Dan Brooks. I just think that right now the herb's concern for the community members and hunters and so forth is to keep that access open and that not close it on until who knows when, but to keep it open this time and then, you know, because we're in the middle of winter, to during next year work on more of a buffer to create more privacy.
I think we're talking two different things
right.
here.
So Laura, can you bring your map up to Lisa so she can show you where that buffer, where we thought the buffer was going to go? We're not talking about the wooded area. We're talking
right.
about the road.
Right.
We know the wooded area runs
yeah.
this
right.
way
so
and the road runs
true.
That way.
That's not what we're
okay.
talking about.
No.
We're talking about
from
there was
there?
Agreement to either put a fence here or to put additional shrubbery up along here in order to help create a separation between the cemetery and the access road.
Okay.
And that's what our understanding is. And when you said no, that's what we're trying to figure out.
Okay, so that is completely agreeable. I thought you were referring to when they were proposing to close the road right here.
No.
Okay.
On the same page. I knew we were talking.
Okay.
All right.
Would paving that road also make a difference? Because I think a lot
paved.
Of it is with the dust, too.
I think that road is paved, but it ends and it becomes just dirt. It's just dirt that's being driven on, and it's making a rough road because people are driving space. Off the paved portion to where the Waterbird's Nest Lake is, or whatever pond that is, whatever that is.
Because when we're there, when we come off of Pine onto Adams, you're talking that long straight road that goes back.
Yes.
Right.
Okay, that was gravel.
Right.
So
okay.
I didn't know that that was the enter road or whatever. So that's the road we took. And I could understand what the people are getting at. You know, if it's dry out, you're going to get your dust, the noise,
But why couldn't that road be paved back to where the other road comes up farther and goes in?
Well, rather than paving that and creating more traffic, pave the other road off of Adam, not off of County U, so they can use that one. Traffic goes this way rather than past the cemetery.
That's how I was trying to get cleared up here, which roads you're talking about, because I agree, too, with that one being right next to it. You know, there's no buffer. So, now I understand what it's the road
and what,
I'm
what's
up
being said to us and what's being said in the letter is opposite. And so until we're clear about that, I don't think we're ready to act on it. And there needs to be a plan, not just that it's going to get done. There actually needs to be a tangible plan with a time frame of when it's going to get done and what resources are necessary to commit to that.
Some tall shrubs would be the best thing, like the arborvitaes or something like that.
Well, there's a restriction on planting anything right now in the cemetery. So that's another issue, unfortunately.
I'm hoping Pat will.
Yeah, thank you. I just think from the herbs perspective, and they'd be willing to work on any plan and bring back a plan. I guess they're concerned that if the moratorium is kept in place indefinitely until a plan is eventually approved, that they're just shutting down a resource for the larger community.
Well, they could still come through the other side. They can come on, you know, the other entrance. It's a rough road, too, but there's nothing prohibiting that side of access.
Yep.
So we'll work with Environmental Health and Safety to come up with a plan to put some kind of, like you said, a buffer where it looks like there's trees planted there now, small trees, and enhance that.
So the moratorium will be removed, but only for access off?
I don't think we said that yet.
Yeah, we didn't say anything.
We didn't say anything. We want to plan before we do anything. Pat, and then to Jenny.
I'm just looking for clarification. So I was here to say we're here to help, you know. So I understand, you know, there's already young trees already planted up there probably where you're pointing. But where we could add more is along that road going in there. We had to post up, and we did put the cable up there, so we did block the access to that site. The other site, we didn't do that. We just had the post. We didn't block the access. But we could tell tourism, don't be using that site off of Adam Drive. Use County U. There's no big heavy trucks going back there anymore. No reason for it. It's shut down. It's not known as a material site area anymore. That's been shut down, so there won't be that heavy traffic. So that steerage is gone. Even with us putting a post up there yesterday, we had somebody to drive around the post. You know, so that's kind of why we have to do something around that area on along the side of the roads. Where the best thing to do is do some plantings of some shrubs or trees and stuff like that. But our team can work with Laura's team and work with the Environmental Resource Board to have more of a visual-type plan, too, I think. But in the meantime, I think the community is wondering, can they access that where the waterbird's off of County U? Because right now we still have that cabled off of going into where the waterbird's nest with two posts. Even though they're driving around it, somebody drove around it yesterday, we could plant some shrubs this, you know, late spring to prevent that from happening, too, until this is all worked out, but. But I think the question is if you have a moratorium, that means you can't access on you also.
True. So until we get a more definitive plan, that's the whole issue. We want a definitive plan. Verbal commitments are good. The written commitments are good. But we need a definitive plan.
So. All right.
Thank you. Jenny?
I'd like to see the moratorium lifted. I've had calls as well for people who are looking to go back there. Like Tahasi said, Methodist Episcopal Church is right next to a busy highway. There's a cemetery on Seminary Road. Now that we're all on the same page, I'd like to see it lifted. The Herb Board can bring back a plan to plant some trees along there and ask Kirby to stop taking the tours back there.
I think the other thing is it's the access is to anybody. There are 9 tribals that go back there, and it's not just the even though the moratorium is a tribal one, there's still a lot of non-tribals that go back there, and you just heard Pat say they're driving around the cable. Mm-hmm. And we can't do nothing about a county highway or a county road next to a historical cemetery that's been there before all the development. This is different because this is vacant land that we totally own, a road that we totally own that we can have some influence over. But we can't do anything that the Episcopal Church is on Freedom or Methodist is on Freedom Road. And those are real safety concerns, but, you know, until we get the county and everybody engaged, that's not going to change. It's just not going to change because those places have been there for over 100 years. And this is different. This is a new cemetery. It's a new development. It's, you know, we totally own that access road. So we can do something about it. And it's because the community is asking us. It's not because none of us have anything else to do. We all know that. So that's the difference between a long-standing old cemetery occupied by and owned by churches on roads that we don't own. You know, those are public access roads that have been here for many, many years. So there's a huge difference between those comparisons. So I think a lot of it was because the tours were coming through, you know, and it's just really catty. That's all there is to it. Not only that they want to see the water's bird's nest, like why they can't go around to the county U, but not only that, they're coming to see a sweat, and they actually get to sit in the sweat on their tours. I'm like, wow, this is really catty. So this is something that we have the capacity to make decisions over. So that's why it's important. And it is a newer cemetery, and it came to us because of the flooding as well and the wetlands, but there's just a lot of issues with this whole area. Brandon?
I guess I'm in favor of lifting the moratorium as well as just in having that Adams Road access be restricted until we get a plan. County U can be accessed. I just think, you know, the land is for the community, and just having the ability to access it at one point is a good compromise to say we can access on the county U side and be able to utilize that site and restrict the access to on the cemetery side. I think it's a reasonable ask that we have until we can lift it completely and have that those shrubs, you know, blockage that can block that road from the cemetery, and I think that's something we can work on for the spring.
Any other questions or comments on this item? Kathy?
I apologize for coming in late. Could you please tell me what the discussion is on exactly, specifically?
We're on item new business D, which is a request to approve a request for Environmental Resources Board to lift a moratorium to allow access to where the water birds nest. And we have some staff people here that have asked that it be open, and they were saying that there wasn't an agreement for a buffer because they understood the buffer was the woods, but our understanding is the buffer needed to be that actual access road that goes past the cemetery and to the area where the water birds nest, where the old sweat used to be. They're saying that the herb board wasn't in agreement with the buffer and they wanted the moratorium lifted, am I right? And then in this letter, it says from the chair of the herb board, it says the herb requests the moratorium be removed in order to once again allow access to where the water birds nest, and also to create a buffer to the cemetery out of respect for the privacy of the cemetery. Herb makes the request based on community comments received and because access to natural areas is important for Oneida community members and hunters. So that's the letter that came forward, dated December 15th, it was sent to BC Liaison on the Hassey Hill and forwarded to the committee So this is where we're at, is having this discussion.
And this issue has been on this floor for how many years? At least 3.5 years?
Quite a while. Several years.
I don't recall ever hearing of the Environmental Board prior to today's date. So I guess I kind of wonder what part don't you understand?
Are you directing the question to us or to some?
To the herb board.
To the herb board. These are staff for the herb board. There is no herb board member here. The herb board consists of Al Manders, Richard Baird, Ted Hawk, Marlene Garvey, Tom Hoven, Gerald Jordan, Megan White, Sean Skinner, and Nicole Stieber. People presenting today are not herb board members. They're staff for the herb board. And they're here on
so behalf. Their interest is monetary?
I don't
I mean,
really
if
know.
They're here, they're getting paid to be here, right? I'm not getting paid to be here. I've never gotten paid to be standing here.
All right, Kathy.
So what part don't they understand? The staff?
I don't know that they're not understanding. I think what's happening here is we're having a conversation to get to a point where we can to agree to something. That's where we're at.
And my understanding is that there is another access off of you to
yes,
that area.
Is. Yes, and that's been
And
discussed.
All these hunters that are complaining or, you know, I keep on hearing that the same people keep coming up here and whining and complaining. The same people, you know. I keep hearing that. I hear a lot of comments, too. And I'm sure there's a lot different comments at the herb board than there is here. And these hunters that are so wealthy or healthy or whatever it is, they can walk the area easily, I would think, you know, from the access from you. And I don't know what the issue is. They finally got a rope up, as pitiful as it looks, but, you know, who cares? Well, actually, and I'm just, I guess I'm still going to stand here and I'm still going to say, I wasn't the one that raised the issue or lied to anybody. You know, I was lied to by staff, by employees, you know, by boards, committees,
Madam Chair,
commissions.
Point of order. Those are
of course you're going to say it's out of order.
Because they're personnel related.
You can't handle hearing people's opinions and you can't handle
them,
hearing
so
people's statements.
I'm going to ask for
So
point
of course
order.
You're going to call for the question.
All right. We need to get back on track here. Jenny?
Madam Chair, I'd like to make a motion to approve the request from herb board to lift the moratorium to allow access to where the water birds nest and to restrict access on Adam Drive only.
Second.
There's a motion by Jenny, seconded by Lisa, to lift the moratorium with a restriction of access on the Adam Drive Road only. So the moratorium will be lifted, but there will be a restriction continuing with the Adam Drive Access Road. That is a motion by Jenny, seconded by Lisa. Questions or comments on the motion itself? Brad?
Does that include using the cemetery itself, driveway, for getting
that's,
back there?
That's the restricted access is that road in the motion.
So when you come down Adam Drive off of you, there's that first driveway.
Two
and then if you go down farther, there's another road that goes back.
There's the paved road, and then there's the dirt road.
Yeah.
I'd and like I'm, to
that's why I'm asking because
access
the black,
on the dirt road.
You're talking about just the dirt road.
Just the dirt road.
But you can go in on the cemetery
yes.
and drive back to get on that dirt road.
At the end of the dirt road.
Yeah.
The cable is up now.
Well, it wasn't when I was there last time. So you'll have to have the cemetery included that you can't use the cemetery road as access either.
I don't want to restrict the cemetery.
I'm talking about for people that are going to use that land back there. Because if you're going to restrict the dirt road down off Adams Drive, then you're going to have the cemetery road that goes back to that dirt road also. If it's just for cemetery use, fine, but otherwise they could go in through the cemetery and get on that road and go back.
Well, the restriction, the intent is there for that area.
Pat, where's the cable that currently, is it up where the gravel road starts or where the gravel road ends, where the cemetery ends?
The cable is up at the end of the gravel road so they can't go into where the water birds. This way, the people who want to use the gravel road to get to the cemetery, that they still have access. So it's like a big U then.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, well, a jagged kind of. But it can, you can start on Adam Drive and come all the way back on Adam Drive with on the gravel road. Just beyond that entrance into the last entrance to the cemetery, where you go into where the water birds, that's where we have the cable up. And that's where we were planning on planting the shrubs and stuff like that, is right where that cable is.
Any other questions regarding the current motion on the floor? If not, all those in favor of the motion, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries.
Motion, Lisa? Madam Chair. I would like to make a follow-up motion to defer this item to Environmental Resources Board and Environmental Health and Safety to bring back a plan on how to buffer this area between the cemetery and the road for as information to us, and then at that point reconsider the request.
Time frame?
Second. 30 days.
A motion by Lisa, second by Jenny, to defer the issue regarding the buffer to the Herb Board and to Environmental Services Department, and that a report be brought back to the committee in 30 days. Questions or comments on the subsequent motion here? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Thank you.
Happy holidays.
Yes, same to you. Alrighty, the next item is a request to accept the emergency management fiscal year fourth quarter report for 2015.
And we deferred all the
reports. Oh, those are deferred, yep. Sorry. So we are going to the executive session items of the agenda. At this time, we're going into reports. That would be executive session A, reports, item one, accept the Oneida Retail Enterprise report. This one was asked to be deferred to the next meeting in January.
So move, Madam Chair.
Second.
So motion by Fawn, second by Lisa, to defer the fourth quarter report for retail to the January meeting. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. The next item is the Chief Counsel report.
We're requesting two actions, one to accept the report and two to accept the results of the e-poll.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Second.
Motion by Jenny, second by Brandon. Can you repeat the motion? I didn't catch it, Jenny.
One's to accept the report, accept the other's to enter the
accept the results of the e-poll.
Accept the results of which e-poll?
The e-poll regarding signing on to the amicus brief in Nebraska v. Parker.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. It's a motion by Jenny, second by Brandon, to accept the report and accept the request to join an amicus brief regarding the Nebraska case. Questions or comments on the motion? If none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. Next item is the CFO report.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Motion to approve the Chief Financial Officer report for December 22nd, 2015.
Support.
Motion by Lisa, second by DeHasse, to accept the CFO report. Questions or comments? If none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. The next item is a request to accept the Intergovernmental Affairs and Communication Report. There is a request to approve the 1915C Tribal Waiver Option White Paper as well.
And the report.
Lisa.
Motion to approve the Intergovernmental Affairs and Communications Report of December 22nd, 2015.
Support.
Motion by Lisa, seconded by Fawn. Questions or comments on the motion to accept the 1222 report? If none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. Lisa?
Follow-up motion, Madam Chair. Motion to approve the 1915C Tribal Waiver Option White Paper.
Second.
It's a motion by Lisa, second by Jenny, to accept the 1915C Tribal Waiver Option White Paper. Questions or comments on the motion regarding this item? If none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. The next item is the Gulf Enterprise report. There's a request to defer this to January 13.
So moved. Second.
It's a motion by Jenny, second by Lisa. To approve the deferral on January 13th. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Next item is a request to accept the audit committee meeting minutes of November 12th.
So moved. Second.
So motion by Jenny, second by Brandon, to accept the November 12th audit committee meeting minutes. Questions or comments on November 12th audit minutes? If none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Next request is to approve the cage fault compliance audit and lift the confidentiality requirement to allow tribal members to view the audit.
So moved.
Support.
So motion by Lisa, seconded by Fawn. Questions or comments regarding the cage vault compliance audit? If none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. Player tracking compliance audit.
Motion approved, Madam Chair.
Second.
So motion by Fawn and seconded by Jenny to approve the player tracking compliance audit and lift confidentiality requirement to allow tribal members to view the audit. Questions or comments on that motion? If none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. The next item is a request to approve card games and poker rules of play audit and to lift the confidentiality.
So moved, Madam Chair.
So motion by Jenny. Is there support?
Support.
It's a motion to approve the card games and poker rules of play and audit and lift confidentiality. A motion by Jenny, second by Fawn. Questions or comments? If none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. The next item is a request to approve the Crafts Rules of Play audit and lift confidentiality requirement.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Is there support on the motion?
Second.
Motion to approve rules of play for Crafts and lift the confidentiality requirement. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. The next item is a request to approve the blackjack rules of play audit and lift the confidentiality requirement.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Second.
It's a motion by Jenny, seconded by, was that you, Brandon?
Yep.
Brandon. To approve the blackjack rules of play audit and lift the confidentiality. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. Item 7 is a request to approve the Ultimate Texas Hold'em Rules of Play audit and lift confidentiality.
Motion approved, Madam Chair.
There's a motion to approve by Fawn. Is there support?
Second.
Second by Jenny. All those in favor of the motion to approve the Ultimate Texas Hold'em Rules of Play and lift the confidentiality, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Approve the drop count, compliance audit, and lift confidentiality.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Support.
Motion by Jenny, second by DeHasse, to approve the drop and count, compliance audit, and lift confidentiality. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. The next item is a request to approve bingo compliance and lift the confidentiality.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Support.
It's a motion by Jenny, second by DeHasse, to approve the bingo compliance audit and lift confidentiality requirement. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. The next item is a request for approval on the complementary items and services audit and lift confidentiality.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Support.
It's a motion by Jenny, second by DeHasse, to approve the complementary items and services audit and lift confidentiality. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? One abstention from Lisa. Motion carries. The next item is a request to approve the paramutual wagering audit and lift confidentiality requirement to allow for tribal members' view.
So moved.
Support.
It's a motion by Lisa, second by DeHasse. Questions or comments? All those in favor of the motion say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. The next item is a request to update to accept the update regarding complaint number DR-1301. This one is due back January 8th. Request to defer to the officer meeting.
Madam Chair, make a motion to accept the recommendation provided by the team and defer to the officers for follow through.
Second.
There's a motion by Jenny, seconded by, who was that, Lisa, to accept the recommendation of the committee and to defer this to the officers for follow-up. All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. The next item is a request to defer the hospice advantage update for 21 days.
Madam Chair, make a motion to defer to the next meeting, January 13th.
Is there support on the motion?
Support.
It's a motion by Jenny, seconded by Fawn, to defer the Hospice Advantage update for the January 13th meeting. Questions or comments? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. Brandon? You're abstaining. One abstention from Brandon on a deferral for 21 days to January 13th. So next item is a request from Finance Committee. There's a request to defer this item, and it's being asked to be deferred to February 25th.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Second.
It's a motion by Jenny, seconded by Brandon, to defer this item to February 25th. This is in regards to the Finance Committee recommendation regarding the Native Diversification Network Procurement Technical Assistance Center. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. The next item is a request to update or review the update regarding the September's Treasurer's Report. Committee's looking for written responses on these items from the direct reports as well as a follow-up sooner than later, I believe, on the housing issue regarding the Treasurer's Report.
I'll make the first attempt.
Okay, sure.
All right. Motion to accept the preliminary information and require the direct reports be scheduled with the business committee in the month of January to provide additional information on the variances.
Second.
There's a motion by Lisa, seconded by Jenny, to accept the preliminary report and that a meeting be scheduled in January with the direct reports to further explain the variances. Questions or comments on the motion? Vaughn?
In the November 25th excerpt, it talks about the positive negative variance of 100,000, more or less. Do we want to make that with the directive? Because when we got some of the reports back, some of it was like everything, like less than 100,000. Do we want to stick to what's the excerpt in here?
It was based on the treasurer's report, so was anything 100,000 or more or less positive or negative based on the treasurer's report? It's not based on every item within the budget, I don't believe, but maybe I'm wrong. Good question. What's clarification, Lisa?
My understanding is that some of the areas were cumulative and it was reported as a cumulative number, and that's why you see in the different breakdowns for some of the areas, because it was multiple areas that reached that amount. So that's why they were in there that way. But they should be included if they're okay at that or more.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? So it is 100,000 or more overall. All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries.
Follow-up motion.
Lisa?
Madam Chair, make a motion for the Secretary's Office to schedule the appointments appropriately.
Support.
So motion by Lisa, second by Fawn, for the Secretary's Office to schedule the appointments as appropriate or appropriately. Questions or comments on the motion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. Anything else on this item? Okay, the next item is a request to approve the finalized plan of action related to the rules of decorum. I don't know what's confidential about it.
Good afternoon.
For a GTC meeting.
Yeah.
We are in open.
It was my understanding that we weren't given a presentation. I think we're here basically to field questions or concerns.
Lisa.
Procedural question, Madam Chair, and help from the attorney, please. If it's appropriate for us to move this item into open session item at this time.
Having reviewed the report, I don't see anything in there that would require it to remain in open session. The business committee would have to take a motion to move it from executive to the open session.
Okay, Madam Chair.
Lisa?
I'd like to make a motion to have this item be considered an open session item at this point.
There's a motion by Lisa to take this item from the executive session portion of the agenda and move it to the open session portion of the agenda. Is there support on the motion?
Second.
Motion is supported. Motion to move this to the open session of the agenda. Motion by Lisa, second by Brandon. Question or comments on the motion? If none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. Lisa?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So just to quickly recap, again, over the last year, the business committee has been debriefing with our staff and our areas that help us coordinate general tribal council meetings. And we receive feedback from staff, whether that's our staff, internal security, enrollments, et cetera, on things that we need to be cognizant of and how we could potentially improve the experience at general tribal council meetings with such a large crowd, tackling issues such as anything from room temperature to you know, disorderly behavior in meeting settings. So what we did over this last year was agree to assess after each meeting and then come up with some solutions on how we could address some of the concerns. So the business committee did take action to do two things for this January meeting, which was request a set of rules of decorum, which have been noticed to General Tribal Council over the last year or longer in every meeting packet, and then to enforce those rules to ask that a sergeant-at-arms be appointed for this process to be enforced. So what we did after approving that path on how we're going to move forward, we did work with internal security and asked them to help us figure out the plan for implementation and how that would work. So what we have before us is a recommendation from internal security on how those two things would be carried out for the General Tribal Council meeting in January. And I believe there were a few questions that we had.
Well, I think some of the questions were around whether or not, one, this needed General Tribal Council's approval, two, whether or not an actual ordinance needed to be developed, and then I think the other consideration was around who has authority when a sergeant of arms is established or appointed. Is it going to be a security person? And then to what degree does that fall under Robert's rules and the expectations of the General Tribal Council? I think those were kind of basically the questions.
I can't address the Robert's Rules of Orders because I haven't taken that course. But I can say that regarding who should make the call on disorderlies or whatever, we had traditionally always thought that it would be the chair that would make that call. In other words, the chair would decide to take a mic away. The chair would decide whether to have someone removed. Of course, that's your purview as to how you want to do it. But then if you bring in a sergeant at arms, you could delegate that authority, in my opinion, to that person. But I think you might run into some situations where you're in heated discussions and the chair and the sergeant at arms or the business committee might be at odds as to whether someone had crossed that line or not. So my opinion would be it should be the chair or designee that would make that call. So there's no embarrassment, no argument, that kind of stuff. I know in the past I had suggested too, we have placements throughout the meetings as far as where security is, and there's a couple OPD officers there too, as to we wanted to know where you wanted that sergeant arms at, whether it was up going to be up in the platform with you or down lower sometime. That decision has to be made. We talked about placing a security officer at the mics themselves, which might deter some people that like to say bad things with a uniformed security officer there. And then if you got to take that mic away, you take it away right away before an officer has to come down a big long ways to get there, and they're still shooting their mouths off and insulting people and stuff like that. So decisions of the business committee as far as that stuff goes. I think we had a couple questions at the end there. The swearing in of the sergeant-at-arms person, I don't know legally whether that has to be done at each meeting or you can designate one for a long period of time. I leave that up to the law office to determine that. As far as the disorderly conduct ordinance, when I was in law enforcement, there were two types of disorderly conduct. There were the state charge, and then there was your ordinance charge. And if the tribe was to develop one of their own disorderly conduct, I wonder if that's going to come into conflict as far as enforcement if it gets to the point of going to a court where fines are levied or possibly jail time. So, again, that's a law office issue. I can't address whether GTC has to approve this or not. It's my understanding you guys could, but again, maybe I'm wrong.
Well, just for clarification purposes, it is in the upcoming packet. presented to General Tribal Council for adoption. So that's the way that it's laid out, so that it's very clear we are asking General Tribal Council to take this action. So just, you know, making sure that everybody's on the same page with that. So I guess the question around the suggestion that was put in there about the disorderly conduct ordinance, just to be clear, all that was being stated in that sentence was just to say, if we choose to do this in the future, it's something that we need to take into consideration to make sure that the rules and the whatever the ordinance would say are complementary to one another. That's what I'm understanding you say. Okay. And then we did get the question about whether or not a sergeant in arms needs to be sworn in if appointed. We did get that question asked and answered. So Joanne, if you could please restate your answer to us so that we just have it clear for everybody's information about that part of it.
The answer is no. The sergeant at arms is not a law enforcement official. They're simply someone identified to assist the chair to keep the order in the meeting.
Right. And then the last question that was raised was about whether or not the business committee's preference was to continue to have our security sergeant and a OPD officer located at the back of the stage where they currently are. And I think one of the things that we had talked about was to modify the location of that individual to have them located at the front of the stage, front left of the stage, to prevent free access to coming up, having direct access to the committee during the meeting. Because right now that currently has taken place a few times where people have had just decided to come on up, and you know, at certain points we don't know what intents are, and we're just trying to make sure that we have a good experience for everybody. So that is one change that we would be asking for, is to have somebody located there on the front, and I believe that's it would be the northeast side of the stage.
Well, the left side is blocked off, I think, with
the right
that
side is blocked off with the pipe and drape.
Right, with the pipe and drape wall.
Well, and then
you're
there's
right
the
my left. Yeah. Facing the stage, it's left.
Facing the
on
stage,
the stage it's right.
Yeah.
So really, people access that stair, the stairs. If you're facing the stage on the right-hand side, it's open.
So are you asking us to
put
add some changes to this?
Steps.
That you want us to do that?
I'm just answering those questions that we have.
Yeah.
So it's just communicating it back to Jason.
Yeah.
Also, I don't know if it's in the business committee's best interest, but I don't know how many complaints you guys are getting after each meeting. I'm getting complaints. I'm getting phone calls from not only attendees, but especially from my officers about the abuse they're taking, mm-hmm. being spit on, being pushed, being sworn at, people just not even listening or obeying. And I've had talks with Rich regarding OPD officers maybe having but I have to tell you, it seems like the majority of the problem seems to be coming from some of our elder women. And it's not going to be a good thing if in front of people that an elder woman or elderly period is going to be handcuffed or dragged out of a meeting. That would be an extreme thing, but I could see it happening if this tribe really enforced the laws like they would say in a Green Bay City Council or something like that, because some of the behavior is really, really sad. Mm-hmm. And I know we're at this point now, so.
Right.
Yeah, and to answer your question, we do get that feedback. So again, when we debrief, when we talk about the logistics and how things went or the concerns that were raised, we do have those things raised to us at that point. And just to reiterate, that is one of the reasons why we agreed to take the step that we're taking now, which is the decorum rules have always been in the packet. We're asking for the formal recognition, and then we're asking for the enforcement. So we're hoping that these things, you know, and it's a good thing. It's a good thing to continue to try to make sure that we have decorum in the room and for everybody to have a good experience there and to feel safe in the environment. And so we want it to be positive. And we're hoping that by at least offering up the solution to the General Tribal Council that there is continued awareness about some of the things that we all need to take responsibility for when we have those meetings and gatherings together.
There are also instances where the security department has the authority, and we have lots of people that we ban. And there are some rare occasions where some Oneida members are banned from the Radisson Hotel also, which would prohibit them from coming to these meetings. They're very few, but it's there. And that might be something you want to consider, say, an accumulation, repeated behavior, and something like that, where they might be banned for X amount of meetings or permanently or whatever. But I thought I'd toss that out there, too. And that, you know, once people realize that, I think you're going to see some changed behaviors from the people that might otherwise not act accordingly.
Kathy?
I would just like to point out as a special note here that it goes both ways. There are incidents, I'm sure, that happen to security people and officers and such as that, but there are also incidents where security people are also abusive and disrespectful and inappropriate. And I this last meeting, after the meeting, I was yelled at by an individual, and I don't know if it was a security person, an officer, or what, but it was a female, and she came up and more or less took it out on me. I wasn't the one that was screaming and yelling and pointing their finger in my face like this, you know, yelling at me and saying, I don't want this and that. And the officer came up and addressed me as if there's a problem here. And I immediately said, well, it's not me. It was pretty obvious what the problem was, but it wasn't taken well. And because there may have been something in the past the person doesn't like about me, and I know her, she knows me, and I know why she don't like me. But you don't address somebody just because you don't like them. I don't care whether you're wearing a badge or a hat or whatever. But there are, it goes both ways. And in that one particular GTC meeting, what I witnessed and what I saw, because I was standing at the middle microphone, was an aggressive, there's us and them. And it's okay for them to be aggressive, but it was made to look like that when the security guard showed up, our person or whoever that was, Linda Dallas was the one that was treated like she was the one that was doing it, and she wasn't. It was real obvious who was. So, and then the same went for the elderly woman who was treated like she did something wrong when it was pretty obvious it wasn't. There was people nearby that were saying, no, she didn't. You know, so there's also, you're going to have to deal with is these so-called officials who are inappropriate officials in their capacity as officials. And they're never going to get addressed because they're going to be considered, you know, they're perfect and they're right. And that's the thing that I have a problem with. When I see things like this happen, it's really obvious when something like this has happened. It has been obvious. It was obvious. And it is. And it is a problem that's going to exist as long as you only address it from one directive, from one direction. You look at it from their point only and don't hear the other person, then of course you're going to be biased or unbiased or whatever the appropriate word is, and inappropriate and unprofessional and abusive, which is people with titles. A lot of times in a lot of cases, it's the people that hold titles that are the abusers because they continuously get away with it. And that's where your problem's going to lie. And I've experienced fraudulent police reports, fraudulent accusations. I've experienced being treated very, very abusively, physically, emotionally. And it does exist. It's called lateral violence, and it's across the board, and it's in families. And once you understand that, if you have an open mind to look at it the way it is and understand it instead of taking advantage of it.
Well, I guess right here we're trying to come to an agreement and an understanding about what the roles are of both security, OPD, And in the event that a sergeant-at-arms is appointed at the meeting, and, of course, the role of myself as the person facilitating the meeting, myself or my designee in the event that Melinda has to chair a meeting or if I have to step out to use a restroom or something. But I think what's important is that we're all on the same page about what the role is of the sergeant-at-arms in the event that that person is appointed. Who is that person? What is their authority? Who do they take direction from? What is the expectation? I think it's real important that we're all clear about that going forward, and that's my main concern, is that we're all of the same understanding of what that person's role and authority is and who they take direction from. And thus, that's part of the exchange of questions that have come from the security report, you know, asking about if a sergeant-at-arms needs to be sworn in. I don't know that they need to be sworn in. They need to be appointed. And if it's appointed, that individual is appointed and acknowledged at the meeting, then we all know that that is the person for that meeting, because that may or may not change because, you know, security on yourself or your designee decides who works the meetings. And same with OPD. Rich decides which officers work the meeting, and that'll change. It'll change from meeting to meeting. So that's important that we all understand what the roles are of each body, because I think sometimes there is a misunderstanding about who responds to what. Does security respond or does OPD respond? And, you know, I think security sometimes waiting to see if OPD will, and OPD's there thinking, well, I think security needs to. And then I'm sitting there thinking, who's going to respond and to what extent? Because I don't always know. Although we did have the conversation, yourself, Owen, and Rich, and I, and was it Jason in the meeting? And, you know, we had asked about, you know, what the expectation is. And the expectation is that we have a meeting that is safe and orderly, and that public safety is all of our concern. So, Brad, do you have a question?
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised that we're first hearing about these officers. And my understanding is if it's an officer, he, she has the right to arrest that person because that's disorderly conduct and assaulting an officer. So it should have been taken care of by that officer or security or whoever.
Security is not sworn officers. They can't make arrests.
Well,
there's only two police officers there, and that's a large crowd, a large area.
Well, if it was a regular police officer, they should have handled it then. But now, moving on, you were saying about the parliamentarian rules or Robert Rules of Order. Now, I'd like to know why the business committee sits before us like they do. It's not required. Under Robert Rules of Order, it's the chair, the secretary, and the parliamentarian sit. Don't shake your head no, Lisa.
It's not a requirement for me to be there. You're right.
Okay, so then why don't you guys sit on the floor then?
Well, actually, you're in error.
I'm not done, Joanne.
The business committee is required to be at General Tribal Council meeting and present to them as per the job descriptions and other directions of the General Tribal Council.
It also states that the chair has to notice who's there and who's not there. It doesn't say you have to sit before us. Now, under Robert Rules, the GTC meeting is General Tribal Council, being run under Robert Rules. We make the decision if we want a sergeant of arms and who it is. Mm-hmm. Okay? Secondly, if somebody's going to be removed from the meeting, it has to come from a motion on the floor by somebody to whether or not have them removed or just ask them to be quiet and participate. If they refuse, then General Tribal Council makes that motion under Robert Rules. You don't personally set up somebody to do this. It's our meeting, it's under the rules, and if you read the rule book, and if you were trained in it, like I've been, which the tribe paid for, you know what's going on. If you look at the last of the Robert Rules of Order book, it has the disciplinary actions and how it's done. And it's done by the people on the floor. So.
Well, you know, I don't think we're here to have a discussion about whether or not the committee sits up front or not. We're here to talk about decorum and expectations of everybody, myself included. And when we're all there as the General Tribal Council as a body, and my job is to facilitate that meeting. And based on that, we're having a discussion about expectations and decorum and who will be responsible to assuring that the public health and safety is the utmost concern of everyone in the room and myself as the facilitator of that meeting, and the assistance of OPD and security in the event that it becomes necessary. So that's really what we're here for. We're not going to change anything. You know, we're not going to change who's sitting on stage in front of General Tribal Council. That's not going to change, at least not in this administration. So we won't have that conversation right now. You know, that's been the protocol. That's been the precedent. That's been the expectation, and that's what's been accepted. Whether it's written or not, that's where we are at. And I don't expect that to change anytime soon. So back to the decorum issue, I think there were questions and there wasn't really an answer, because I think we needed to have some of the exchange. And I'm glad that you guys are here, but I think still we probably should have asked someone from OPD to come here as well, because, again, I think what's important more than anything when we go forward is that we're all on the same page of what the expectation is and what the roles are of the individuals acting in their capacity as security, OPD, or sergeant-at-arms. And I think what's different here is we are looking to see what that sergeant-at-arms role can and will be.
Yeah, we met with OPD, the lieutenant and assistant chief, last week regarding all of this, and they're on the same page as far as I know. But I also might remind you, the last business committee group, we made it clear in the presence of the chief of police and other parties that it's the security department that's in charge of security. If we need an officer, a sworn officer, we simply request them, and then they have to respond accordingly. But we have designated that security is in charge. You can't have too many people in charge, but that was designated unless SBC wants to change it.
Well, I think that's still the expectation, is that security's main role is to help us monitor the room. OPD is just there in the event that there is some type of violation, and then they are to respond to that. As you said, either because myself or you have asked, you meaning your staff, have asked for their assistance. So I think that's still the understanding. But I think the sergeant-at-arms comes into play with this decorum recommendation, the rules of a decorum recommendation.
Well, if you don't mind that, we've been in contact with Lisa's office for some clarifications and that kind of stuff. If you don't mind, we'll continue to do that right up until this takes effect, if it does, with questions and concerns.
And that's fine. I've been volunteering to coordinate as we proceed to the January meeting, and I think once we get a really good understanding from General Tribal Council, because, again, this is a proposal. This is what we're offering up as solutions to some of the things that we've heard over the last year as we've done our debriefings and our assessments. So I think we're really going to know more once we actually become engaged with General Tribal Council on the 4th. As a reminder, we continue to do the prep meetings. Those are always scheduled before the meetings, and the debriefings are always after. And, you know, security is always welcome to attend those as well. And we continue to have these kind of similar conversations, making sure that we're covering logistics and making sure that we're having things brought to our attention that might have been challenges from the previous meeting when we do the debrief. So we'll continue to do that, coordinate and facilitate that information. So.
And as long as, since it was thrown out there, I think you guys know this already, but for those that don't, if there are security officers that are out of line, we have something called the Oneida Policies and Procedures. You file a complaint according to that policy, and I can guarantee it, it's looked into and responded to.
Well, thanks for that reminder, because, yeah, they're still there in the capacity as an employee, and they still have to follow the expectations of their respective jobs. It just gets a little bit different when we have, because it's a community forum, and it's different because we also have the presence of the OPD there. Kathy, and can you just keep your comments to the actual topic around the decorum, rules of decorum?
Yes. When you have these debriefings, I know in the past, I've been invited to some because I did talk to some of the past officials and things that had been done to me over the years. I have sat in debriefing meetings and have expressed what was the things that were done to me. Some of those people that did those things to me are now sitting in positions on this floor. And so some of those issues carry on yet today. And I'd like to come to those debriefings because of some of the things that have been carrying on after the meeting. And people don't know where to go with it. And I know there has been a few people that tried to go to Owen about things because they brought it to my attention. But as far as your debriefings go, I'm interested in attending because I experience a lot, I witness a lot, and I've observed things. Another thing is I am working on a complaint. And I believe it was either Nancy or Madeline that said they tried to do a complaint with regards to something with Owen and it wasn't accepted well. So I don't know where to take my complaint, actually, but on the GTC floor. And I'd like to entrust it once again back to this body. But I'm working on several different complaints on inappropriate behaviors and conducts. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments on this item? I think the suggestion around creating a disorderly conduct ordinance, I don't know if that's something that would be an internal for security or if that's something that may or may not exist overall, because it has to be an ordinance that applies to everybody, not just employees. And I don't know if there's anything developed around that, if that's in a development stage. Because again, where does the authority lie in the event that something occurs and there's an appeal or a complaint or something that comes out of a situation that could potentially arise? Hopefully not, but did you have a question?
Well, I was just going to respond. I was that suggestion came up in regards to the domestic animal ordinance. It was just a suggestion to kind of as a means to enforce the rules of decorum in the sense of if they know they're going to get penalized or possibility of losing their stipend or having to pay a fine. That was kind of why it was suggested. We're not working on anything like that. It was just brought up in our meeting that we had with OPD last week. OPD did bring it up. They're familiar with the domesticated animal ordinance. So they're more familiar with it than we are. So that's why they brought it up. It was just a suggestion to use as a means to enforce a monetary fine for behavior that is disruptive if it gets to that point at GTC meetings. So we're not working on it, and until we get the direction from OBC, from you guys, if that's something that you guys want us to, but I don't think that's really something for us to work on.
I was under the impression at some point perhaps this could turn into a resolution. You're talking about, as I said, there's state disorderly conduct and county disorderly conduct, serious consequences on the state side, serious fines, jail time, and then it's how the money and the fines are divvied up. And I'm not sure the tribe is at that point yet as far as enforcing that from that perspective.
Lisa?
So thank you for clarifying that, because we did have a conversation around that yesterday for clarity, just reminding ourselves that the way that it's worded in the proposed GTC meeting rules, how we enforce and how we adopt the rules of decorum and how we enforce them. What it, the way that I believe it's worded right now, we discussed this yesterday, was that the verbiage that's in the draft law right now states that a plan will be put into place and adopted in order to enforce. So it's a little bit, so it has structure to it, but yet we have the flexibility to make modifications if we need to. So it is something that is being worked on in the GTC meeting law, but it's not in the context of what you're describing. So it's more in the rules specifically for general tribal council. Yeah.
Okay. Kathy?
I'm glad that was brought up because I would just like to make note of some of the policies and laws that are in place right now that are being abused. There's a case where a contempt charge is made, and these are laws that have been in place for some time, and all of a sudden, if somebody doesn't like somebody, they charge them with contempt, and then they charge them with a $4,000 fine. And according to the law, if the law was read properly, the fine is like at $1,000 up to $1,000. So because of who the person is and what the person does, and, you know, in order to control, you know, power control issues over certain individuals, they did a $4,000 contempt charge, which is absolutely ridiculous according to the law that does exist. So I guess one of the things I'd like to bring out to note about is that, you know, there's a possibility of some very out-of-hand mentality that could arise out of all of this. And our current laws are not followed. They're, you know, you pick and choose what law you want to follow and if you're going to actually do it. And because it's inconsistent across the board right now with what we have, you know, tread cautiously.
Well, again, this was just something that was suggested to develop. So it's a suggestion. My understanding now, based on a conversation, there is nothing being drafted at this time. But I guess to me, you know, there are things in place. There are things in place, and they apply to everybody. Public safety violations can apply to anybody at any time in any public situation or otherwise, for that matter. And I think with the presence of OPD, they have a responsibility regardless to enforce any kind of disorderly behavior. That is their job regardless. So I think that has been discussed between myself and security and OPD, and that expectation remains. So what does the committee want to do with this item at this time? I don't know that this is ready to go forward yet, but I think it's a good start.
I guess my question, Madam Chair, for you would be to be, are there any other questions that you have? I don't know if we quite answered the question about how the Sergeant at Arms is appointed, and I know that's one of the questions that we had. Again, we asked security to come up with some recommendations on how we would go about doing this. The first recommendation that's been offered up now is that security would schedule an individual to fulfill that role. That was the way that I understood it in here.
Yep. Typically in the past, it's been the lieutenant, who is Jason King.
Mm-hmm.
I think everyone's familiar with him. And in the event that he's not there, it's Billy Reed or Cody Hulse. So it'll be one of those three people.
Those are sergeants of security, but not necessarily sergeant at arms at the GTC meeting. And I guess that's the difference between what you're describing and what I'm hearing Lisa describe. And that's why it's real important that we're all on the same page with the same understanding.
Yeah, and that's the question. We posed the question to security, offer up a suggestion. That was the suggestion you provided. So I understand you have a question about that. So I think that's one of the things we should get clarity around now. So we do have an option to go with if we so choose to, based on what security's presented. And then we also have the suggestion that it needs to be done in accordance with Robert's rules, which is the chair would appoint who that individual would be to fulfill the role. So I think that would be one question that I would still like for us to clarify before we, you know, complete this item for today, so that we can go back and make any kind of additional modifications that we need to make as we go through forward in the prep meeting next week. Our prep meeting is scheduled for Tuesday next week, and that appointment was sent out to everyone, you know, probably like a month ago. So if we have to make any additional adjustments, we can do so at that point. So I guess my question to you is, what is your preference? Would you like to go with the security recommendation, or would you prefer to make that appointment yourself?
I think the expectation is that it would come from myself or the chair or whoever's right. chairing the meeting.
Okay.
I think security's role is continue to make sure that security is staffed at the meeting, and they've done that job very thoroughly, and they have an understanding amongst themselves who their lead is, and that won't change. That won't change whether there's a sergeant at arms or not.
One other thing that might be something you want to digest a little bit is the behavior that you see in the actual meetings themselves is one thing. I think where another half of that is out there in the hallway, and I mean that's where they're really getting out of control, pushing people and all that kind of stuff. That would be that behavior is outside your sight of vision. So we've got officers out there, you know, that have, and that's probably where you're going to find your OPD officers too a lot of the time, is because that's where the bad crowd is. But just we have to take that into consideration too. Now, Rich used to have sworn officers there. He's now cut it down to two, and maybe that's something to think about too. Maybe just sending this stuff out and telling people or adopting this is going to change some people's behavior by that action alone. I think it will. But it might come down to setting an example of someone or one or two of them that's going to send the real message. And I think once you clip that ban off and they don't get their stipend, that says a lot for a lot of people.
Well, yes and no. I don't think it's about the stipend. It's about the behavior. And it's not about the stipend, because you can be in a meeting without the wristband. You don't have to have a wristband to be in the meeting. The wristbands are to establish quorum and to establish whether or not you get paid for staying. If somebody comes 2 minutes after the registration closes for being eligible for a stipend, they're still allowed in the meeting, so they wouldn't necessarily have a wristband. So it's really not about the wristband. It's really about the behavior and addressing that, at least in my opinion. And it's going to come down to just somebody being removed, period. It's not whether or not they get paid, because somebody may be in there without a wristband, and they get removed. The other thing, too, is there was several people that came up to me during the last meeting prior to it starting, saying there's people in here that aren't enrolled, but I don't know who that is, and I don't know who they were talking about, and I don't know if that's the case. But, you know, short of saying, well, who are they, and me trying to find them in a crowd, I didn't have time to do that. The meeting was going to be, you know, starting in 2-3 minutes, and I'm trying to focus on the content of the agenda, not who's in the room, because it's not my job to man who's in the room. That's why we have a ton of staff. So that's another issue. You know, I wish if people are going to say those things that they can totally back it up and verify that that's the case, because there are tribal members who don't look like they're tribal members, but can't go by sight. And unless you specifically know, because they're a relative of yours maybe, or your next door neighbor for 10 years, you know, well, then, you know, then I need to know specifically, you know. But again, telling me that 2 minutes before the meeting's scheduled to convene doesn't help me at all. So that's why I made the announcement. I thought, well, I'll just make the announcement. And again, that goes back to membership of monitoring each other. That goes back to membership being respectful to one another, because, you know, you and I cannot control everybody's behavior, but I think the expectation that the peers of the General Tribal Council will help foster appropriate behavior, whether it's on the floor, in the hallway, in the bathroom, or anywhere else. So I think that's the expectation more than anything. All right, now that I'm off my tangent, where are we?
Are we going to attempt a motion now?
Okay, what do you want to do with this item?
I'll attempt the first one. Okay, I'd like to accept the internal security recommendations provided as information, noting that the chair will select the sergeant at arms if approved by GTC.
Just second. For clarification, will the sergeant at arms, is that when you select them, is that a security employee or are you going OPD? I guess that's what I'm.
Repeat your question, please.
What?
Can you repeat your question?
Oh, when you select your sergeant at arms, is that going to be a security employee or OPD officer? I'm just asking for clarification. I don't necessarily need to know who.
I guess I haven't given it any thought, to be honest.
Okay.
It most likely will be an OPD person, but I don't know. I don't know if there's a preference one to the other for anybody.
If you do that, then security no longer is the one in charge. It would be OPD. Just so you,
pardon?
I said if you were to put an OPD officer as a sergeant at arms, you've now taken away security being in charge, and it would be OPD. I mean, these decisions don't have to be made now. It's just something
right,
you guys get together
and
think about. And as I said, I'll be in contact with Lisa's office after you talk about this and make some decisions. I'm not even sure you even decided that you want to call it a sergeant at arms. You might want to call it something else.
And I think what he means by that is because, like, when OPD, if we take direction from OPD, we just have to be careful in regards to, like, if what kind of direction they're giving us to do. In a sense of whether it's removing a member or something like that. So that's all. I think that's why it's always been in the past that security was in charge of the meeting in a sense of the addressing the behaviors versus appointing OPD, because then I think there's a bigger gray area of their interactions with members.
Well, I think OPD has an obligation, again, like I said, regardless of where they're at, or, you know, if they're in uniform, they have a responsibility, you know, whether it's in the meeting room, outside the meeting room, period. They have to do their job. We're looking for cooperation, of course, always. We're looking for communication about what the understanding of the roles are, but they have that regardless. I think because even if you guys had an event and something happened and OPD was there, you would expect them to respond to it, right? I mean, everybody would respond. You would and they would, but you would respond in different capacities based on what your authorities are, right?
Yeah, well, this came up a while back, and Oneida's the only place that I'm aware of in this country where a security department reports to a police department. And to me, that's a conflict of interest, and we're looking for trouble. And I've said this before. If you start, when we take people off the floor at a casino, and you'd be surprised how often that happens, and we put people in handcuffs, and we detain them, and we put them in a room with a door closed, there's a lot of these people that believe that you're a police officer, and this hasn't been challenged in court yet. And then there's issues of Miranda rights and so on and so forth, which, as I'm sure you know, security doesn't have to give Miranda rights. So people spill their guts that lead to court cases, that leads to jail time, so on and so forth. So taking certain orders from a police department, such as putting someone in cuffs, detaining them, and they get roughed up and stuff like that, at the order of an OPD sworn officer, can lead to other issues in the future. I mean, that's stuff that has to be thought out, too.
You know, and I guess my response to that is, again, in the event you were at an event, whether it be the casino or the hotel or in the parking lot, and something occurred and you request the assistance of OPD, they have to respond accordingly, right?
Well, yes and no. We actually have to, you have 7 or 8 law enforcement jurisdictions on this reservation.
Right.
And OPD isn't always available, so other people get involved. It can get a little tricky sometimes.
I agree.
I think this tribe is very fortunate to have a risk management office, which kind of helps us out sometimes as far as, I'm not talking about the officers or people themselves, but the tribe in terms of lawsuits and stuff like that. So You call them, they're supposed to respond. That doesn't mean they're going to be there lickety-split. Sometimes they don't show up at all, but that would happen in any jurisdiction for one reason or another.
Okay. When they do respond, they pretty much take over the scene, and then we back off.
And that's fine. We're not questioning that. We're not challenging that. We don't expect anything different. All right, so there's an attempt at a motion here from Lisa to, I can't read my writing anymore.
The motion would be to accept the internal security recommendations as information on this item, noting the chair will select the sergeant at arms if approved by the GTC.
There's the motion. Was there support on that motion?
Yes. That was me.
By Jenny. Okay. Thank you. Any other further comments or questions? If not, all those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions?
Abstain.
One abstention, Brandon. Motion carries. Did you have a question or comment?
I think more of a conversation we need to have as on a working meeting, kind of.
So we do have the prep meeting coming up again, as
what
I stated.
What time is that on
Tuesday? I believe it is at.
The reason I say it because we're developing the GTC meetings law, and a lot of these things will make reference to a SOP, a policy. So getting into those, I guess, those the gears of what we're trying to do is kind of. We can do that another time, I guess. That's kind of what I'm...
So the recommendations to get us to this point as we kind of try to proceed with some solutions came from a work meeting. So if you want, we could, you know, offer up another motion to still send this item back to another work meeting to keep working on those ancillary issues that accompany it.
Yeah, because I'm not against the motion. I'm just more so like just keeping it, leaving it open to make sure there's leeway
to
go back. Yeah, to go back and forth as if... If it's a joint recommendation, if it's something else that we still have the broad ability to do something different, that we might maybe more efficient.
Are you done with us then?
Okay. One other thing. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Thank you.
Thank you
all.
Okay. The next item is request to defer the draft response regarding this. Complaint DR 1302 to the January 13th meeting.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Support.
Motion by Lisa, second by Fawn, to defer item 6 to the January 13th meeting in regards to DR 1302. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Next item is a request to accept the recommendations for follow-up regarding complaint 2015-CC13. And I believe this was going to be brought back to the committee with a report on January 27th.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I'll make a motion to accept the recommendation on complaint 2015-DR13-02 and that a report be back at, what was the date again?
January
27th.
Is there support?
Support.
Motion by DeHasi, second by Lisa, to accept the recommendations and that a report regarding this item be brought back to the January 27th meeting. Questions or comments on the motion? If none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. The next item is regarding complaint number 2015-CC08. I think this one was going to be accepted as information and deferred to the LLC.
Correct. Madam Chair?
Yes.
Motion to accept as information and defer the request to the Legislative Operating Committee for implementation.
Is there support on the motion? Is there support on the motion? Second call.
Is there support on the motion? Third call. If there is no support.
I think this is a different item. The CC one is also, it's part of the first one that was split. One complaint submitted, but there was two parts to it, and this is the second part of the first complaint. Because one was going to a division director and the other one was going to a board.
That's why we got to put more identifying information on these numbers, because we're all thinking something different. So, but I don't know. There was no support on a motion. Motion dies for lack of support. What do you want to do with this item?
This was another one that had to go to the appropriate parties, what level?
I have deferred to the LLC. This is a business committee policy amendment regarding boards, committees, and commissions, and then delete from the agenda.
Right.
So that's my and Lisa's understanding. If you guys have something different, then you need to tell us.
So CC08 starts on page 459 of the revised packet.
Oh, I'm looking at CC13.
Yes. We're on number 8, CC08.
Okay. Sorry, I'm on the wrong one.
So one more down after that. I think it's out of order in the packet. The tab is out of order in the electronic packet.
Okay, yes.
So we're on 8, and then those two should be flip-flopped.
We already acted on the one before it, though. We just did. That one's coming back January 27th.
Yes. So in our packet, these two.
Well, I'm going by the
agenda,
not the packet. Because the packet is very screwed up, I'll say that much. The pages are all out of order, and so I'm going off the agenda because that's what we go off of.
Yep.
Does somebody want to offer a motion on this item? Lisa made an attempt. I was on the same page. I don't know what page you guys are on.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Trish.
I'd like to offer to accept the update as information and request the recommendation of the tribe of emails for the boards, committees, commissions be included in the amendments to the comprehensive policy governing boards, committees, and commissions.
Second.
I didn't hear what you said because I can't hear you, really.
It's difficult.
I got it on. I'm speaking right into it.
Then you have to speak clearly then. I don't know. It's almost like you're mumbling. So if you just speak clearly, that helps.
Accept the updates as information and request the recommendation of the tribal emails for the boards, committees, commissions be included in the amendments to the comprehensive policy governing boards, committees, and commissions. Are you defer to the LOC for that?
Exactly what Lisa said, but okay, good. Is there support on the motion?
I seconded.
All right, thank you. There's a motion by Trish, seconded by Lisa, to accept this item as information and request that the email issue go back to LOC for a policy amendment regarding boards, committees, and commissions. Any questions or comments on the motion? Yes, Brandon.
The reason why I was in support of it because the amendment's already going through the process, so we're already addressing the amendment existing, so it's like in a redundant thing to tell us what we're already doing. So that's kind of what I'm saying.
It's not necessary to make a motion?
Yeah.
And I think our conversation around that was to just make it official because it's a suggestion right now. And I think my concern was that I brought up was if it's just a suggestion at this point through public hearing process, it can be undone. And this is actually the formal recommendation to see it needs to be done and not have any wiggle room to say no to it. And that's why I wanted to make it more formal.
Okay.
Any other questions or comments? If not, all those in favor of the motion say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. The next item is a request to review the Powell Committee contract. There was some discussion about process and procedure regarding contracts for the Powell Committee, and that going forward they would make sure that they do what is necessary to get a contract reviewed and approved.
I think, weren't we just going to accept
motion
this?
Motion accept as FYI.
Second.
Motion by Fawn to accept as FYI, support by Jenny. Questions or comments? If not, all those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. The next item is a request to release information regarding the Kellogg grant to tribal members. The follow-up will is being recommended to be done by Secretary's Office and Internal Services.
The motion to defer the follow-up with the Secretary's Office through the Secretary's Office. To the individual to release on whether to release the information regarding the Kellogg grant.
Can you restate your motion and is there support?
Yeah. Motion to defer to the Secretary's Office for follow-up.
Support.
Motion by Brandon, second by DeHasse, to defer this item to the Secretary's Office for follow-up. Questions or comments regarding the motion? Kathy?
I already talked with the Secretary at one point about this very same grant. Do you recall?
Yeah, and you had asked me and where you could get the information, and
right.
I provided you the contact.
Right.
And that was the extent of our conversation.
You sent me to
Joni.
Joni Buckley.
Yep, because she's the owner of the record.
And
yes.
She told me she had no idea what I was talking about. And then in the last BC meeting on this floor here, when they had, Jahinkwa and everyone lined up here, and then she all of a sudden knew about a Kellogg grant. So it's very confusing to me if somebody's going to deny knowing anything about a grant, such a grant, and then to say, oh, yeah, the Kellogg grant. So I'm looking for information on the Kellogg grant. I didn't know that I had to file a complaint with this body. Well, now that I know, you can count on a second complaint coming forward on this Kellogg grant issue because I'm getting a runaround again. Just like the Thornberry Creek audit that I keep being told is out there and nobody wants to show it to me. So I'm like, you got some serious people here that are lying, holding top positions with lots of money and audit committees, and it's frustrating. And then you wonder how come people ask so many questions sometimes. And then people are whining and complaining because there's the same old few people that keep whining and complaining, but then the people who are whining and complaining about the same people whining and complaining are still whining and complaining.
Okay.
So I want to get at the Kellogg grant too. I want to see what this grant is all about that everybody's talking about that nobody knows about.
All right,
so
again, the motion.
I have to file a complaint with you guys, so I'm doing a verbal complaint right now so that you guys know that I'm bringing my formal complaint in written form.
All right. We're trying to address this issue. There's a request for release of information regarding the Kellogg grant, and there's a potential that there is First Nations grant that either overlaps or collaborates or coordinates or is an addition to this. So, we are trying to get to the bottom of it. Lisa's willing to get the necessary information regarding the request. So there's a motion on the floor to that effect right now for her to follow up. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. The next request is a request to review the applications for the Gaming Commission vacancy and determine appropriate appointment. We had a conversation around the requirements and qualifications. I did submit a memo to the business committee regarding my recommendation. I have paper copies, but it was emailed if anyone wants a copy. I have one here. And based on the applications for vacancies on the Gaming Commission, for the vacancy on the Gaming Commission, the applicants, there were 6, 7 applicants. All of them have cleared the required background investigation. Qualified candidates to serve are Amelia Cornelius, Barbara Erickson, Shirley Hill, Gina Van Rosho, Floyd Hill. Accordance with Article 6, Section 62C of the Comprehensive Policy Governing Boards, Committees, and Commissions, I am recommending that Barbara Erickson be appointed to serve on the Gaming Commission for the vacant position. He's not here, so why does it matter? Okay. That is the recommendation. Discussion, questions, comments, recommendation?
Do we have to move this into open before we ask questions?
I don't know why we would need to. I didn't understand why it was in executive to begin with, but it is. And so if you want to move it to open, you can move it to open.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Lisa.
I'm going to make a motion to put the review of the applications for the Gaming Commission back into open session at this point.
It's a motion by Lisa. Is there support?
Second.
Second by Jenny. Discussion on moving this item to open session. Part of the agenda.
I would request clarification on the motion for the record. What exactly is being moved into open session?
The applications.
No, it's not the applications. It's the item. The item is that we were to review the vacancy and determine the appointment. That's what's being. This is an open appointment. This is an open item.
I don't disagree. The appointment itself is an open session item. I'm not entirely certain the applications have been placed on a business committee agenda in a packet as an open session on other in the normal course of business.
Correct.
Okay.
So if the applications are not there, then my request would be that the motion be interpreted that we're moving the subject of the appointment into open session, not the documentation related to it.
Okay.
I see what you mean. I amend my motion to reflect that advice.
Okay.
It's the subject.
There's a motion by Lisa and seconded by Jenny for clarification that this item of appointment only be moved to open session, and the motion is supported by Jenny. Do you concur with that consideration?
Please.
She concurs, and therefore the appointment of the vacancy for the Gaming Commission will be moved to open session and is the appointment for the vacancy consideration only. All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstaining?
Abstain.
Two abstentions, Brandon and DeHasse. All those in favor of the motion carries. 1, 2, 3, 4 in favor, 2 abstaining. And now this is an open consideration, and based on the open consideration, my recommendation remains as designated in my memo to the committee regarding the Gaming Commission vacancy recommendation for Barb Erickson. Kathy, do you have a question?
For clarification purposes, I don't understand why this was either an executive session, but isn't this an elected position?
It is an elected
position. Hasn't
then
been a question for some time now?
But according to the requirements to fulfill a position, because of the time frame remaining, this is going to go to an appointment of the committee rather than a special election. And that particular item has been vetted by this body and has been determined and has been approved in a previous meeting. I can't say when, but it has been. This position for the vacancy to be filled has been posted for quite a amount of time and closed last month. So we're here to make that consideration.
So how much time is left?
For what? Oh, it's, I don't know offhand. I don't know.
17 sometime, I thought.
Yeah, I thought in July 2017, but don't quote me.
Because I can only respond to all the scuttlebutt in the community.
Well,
and I'm
don't.
Sorry, I won't bring it up. But just I'm just one of those people that keeps asking the same questions over and over again.
Okay. We're here for the consideration of the vacancy appointments. Is there a recommendation from the committee based on my recommendation? I made a recommendation. Either you guys support it or you know. I'm waiting for a motion.
I'll make a motion to recommend Barbara Erickson to be appointed to the Gaming Commission.
There's a motion by Jenny's, and I believe a second by Lisa, to support the recommendation to appoint Barb Erickson. Questions, comments on the appointment recommendation? If none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions?
Abstain.
Two abstentions, 1, 2, 3, 4 in favor. Motion carries. Thank you. The next item is a request to consider payment of an incentive pay for November 2015.
Madam Chair.
Lisa.
I'll make a motion to accept the request as information and to deny the request.
There is a motion to accept this information as FYI and to deny the request. Is there support on the motion? Is there support on the motion?
Support.
The motion is supported. Discussion. All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. Unanimous. Thank you. Brandon, you have a question?
No.
Okay. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Whoa. Support. Jumping
again. It's a motion by Lisa. Is there support?
Second.
Second by Jenny to adjourn at 4:05. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstaining? None. Motion carries. Thank you, everybody, and happy holidays. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.